This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance supplement product line. Protocol's mission is to provide top-quality supplements at affordable prices. Protocol offers 50 years of expertise, providing formulations based on the latest advances in nutritional science and incorporating trademarked ingredients that have been tested for efficacy in clinical trials and laboratory studies. I'm so confident in their products that I've included many of them in my Intelligent Medicine Lifestyle Protocols. Protocol for Life Balance is only available through licensed practitioners, so ask your doctor or healthcare professional for it by name. You can get them at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoff, and with us today, Layla Mutin, because it's Q&A with Layla. It wouldn't be Q&A with Layla without Layla. So Layla's here to offer her nutritional perspective. What's our next question, Layla?
Okay, we've got one from Karen. Karen's emailing us from the UK. Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, please share your wisdom on how to resolve anal fissures quickly. My three-year-old son has at least one. Mm-hmm. He has terrible pain that sometimes wakes him up multiple times at night, stomach upset, and then intense itching in his rectum and odorous gas after passing stool.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, Dr. Hoffman, strangely, he has a very cold chill in the hour before he has a bowel movement. What might be causing this?
Okay, well, you know, the concern here is that, you know, anal fissures are tears of the rectal sphincter, and or the anal sphincter is actually called, because the rectum is further up. The anal sphincter is a tight muscle, and it's got to be tight, because if it's incompetent, then you have incontinence.
Yes.
Incontinence of stool. So it's a tight muscle, a ring of muscle, and it can tear. And it can tear due to a variety of reasons. It can tear... you know, when you're passing a hard stool, that's, you know, sort of like, you know, giving birth, you know, that could, tear the perineum in a woman, who's, you know, giving birth. But also, sometimes, unfortunately, these, fissures can be a harbinger of Crohn's disease. It's not uncommon to see, anal fissures as a precursor to Crohn's disease. That would be a concern. Especially given all the digestive disturbances that this young child is having. You know, I can't really account for those temperature changes other than that, you know, maybe there's some anticipatory, changes to this child's autonomic nervous system because she's already been, or she's already been conditioned to pain on having a bowel movement and, you know, as pressure builds up within.
It's a little boy.
As pressure builds up within, lower part of the digestive tract, maybe that's triggering some reaction in anticipation of a pain, a painful episode. I mean, there's one theory. The concern here is that maybe the diet is affecting risk, because the itching seems to be associated with either a bacterial overgrowth or maybe a yeast overgrowth in the gastrointestinal tract. And so, you know, building on the model of what we do for patients with inflammatory bowel disease, with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, I would suggest something called the SCD. And
yes.
Layla, you can take it away from here.
Specific carbohydrate diet is particularly indicated for inflammatory bowel disease and conditions like that. But even not just say ulcerative colitis or Crohn's, but proctitis as well. And by removing some offending foods, especially the grain food group, very starchy carbohydrate vegetables like potatoes, chickpeas, soybeans, and just concentrating on other vegetables and fruits, all the protein sources are allowed, nuts and seeds, and removing all sugar and fluid milk, because we're removing all sugars, not just table sugar, but every disaccharide, meaning the lactose in milk, meaning anything like that. We're not having any sweets or desserts. The monosaccharide that's allowed is fructose, and fructose is in fruit, and it's also in honey. And these are permitted on the specific carbohydrate diet.
But we reserve the right sometimes to tell patients to have a little less of those things in the early phases.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. You know, peel your apples, maybe even bake them in the oven, cook your fruits, cook your vegetables, make sure they're quite soft.
Right. Yeah. What about the consistency? Because, you know, some people go, okay, the specific carbohydrate diet allows me to have nuts, allows me to have seeds, allows me to have raw salads. Would that be advisable for this child at this point?
No, no. And not for a three-year-old, and not in the beginning.
Right.
Everything should be much softer foods.
And also cooked for the possibility of some abrasion or irritation.
Exactly.
With these really very high-fiber foods. You want sort of a soft diet at this point.
Now it's interesting that Karen says, his mother says, thankfully he's no longer constipated and his stools are soft with a high-fiber diet. So she's talking more about soluble fiber, the meat of the apple, not the skin, for example,
and,
of the pear, not the skin.
Since constipation is a component of this, a very common reason for constipation in children is intolerance to dairy. And it's not even a dairy allergy, really. It's just some form of intolerance to dairy. So I would say, you know, although this is like thought to be a very important part of the diet of a growing three-year-old, I'd say, hey, there's a lot of cultures that don't use dairy in children.
That's true.
And they don't end up, you know, with rickets or thwarted. They're fine. Just eliminate the dairy to minimize the potential for constipation, which puts pressure on the anal sphincter. And, you know, when you pass a large, hard stool, that's going to continually irritate the sphincter. See, the problem with this condition is why it's hard to heal is, you know, if you have a wound, you know, somewhere else in the body, I mean, let's say you cut your hand, you know, you put a bandage on your hand and you don't use your hand. Well, you can't do that with your anus. You know, it's, there's constant traffic. There's also constant dirt and germs there because it's a bacterial content of stool. So it becomes hard to heal. And, you know, sometimes, you know, some surgery is necessary. And I don't know what, I'm not a pediatrician, so I can't tell you what you do in kids, but in adults, sometimes they do surgery, to loosen the sphincter, relax the sphincter because the sphincter is in spasm. I think Botox may be an option for, adults to relax the sphincter, but you got to be careful. If you relax it too much, you get the opposite problem, you know, incompetent sphincter, but at least Botox is reversible to some extent. And, one of the, a procedure that used to be used, I don't know if it's used that much in the United States, but, you know, it was taught to me by my professor of, surgery and anatomy in medical school is, what's called anal dilatation under pressure. Under anesthesia, excuse me, where obviously, you know, you don't want to, somebody's already got a tremendous pain. You don't want to like, you know, open up their sphincter manually, you know, with a gloved hand because it's going to hurt like hell and tear.
Yeah.
But actually, that procedure done correctly under anesthesia can break the spasm, loosen the sphincter. But, you know, I don't even know if that's state of the art because this was like, you know, almost 40 years ago that this procedure was talked about. So, you know, those are some of the options. And again, I don't know if they're applicable to a child. That's kind of drastic, I think, for a child when maybe just the dietary measures can succeed in dealing with this. But
Something I forgot to mention here that Karen says, he's also lost his fecal continence.
Oh, boy. Well, you know,
will he gain it? And can he gain it back once the pain is gone?
You know, I think that this is, well, first of all, that's kind of a problematic age for bowel movements anyway.
I'm pretty sure that
there's a great potential for him to recover mastery over his eliminative functions, you know, as he matures, because there a lot of three-year-olds are barely toilet trained. So, you know, I think the prognosis for recovering that is good as he matures.
Yeah. Oh, my, Karen. Best of luck with your little boy.
Yeah.
Oh.
But really try the diet. And, you know, if Karen's listening,
yes.
over there in the UK. You know, try this for a few months, and I'd love you to report back to us on the success, resolution, or lack of resolution of this problem.
Yeah, Karen,
just
to give you a link to the specific carbohydrate diet, the official website is breakingthevicious cycle.info. Breakingthevicious cycle.info. Now, Breaking the Vicious Cycle is also the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So you should seek that out as well. And it goes into great detail about how to start, the different phases, and why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
And how it's supposed to help.
When she was alive, I used to interview Elaine Gotchel all the time. And then upon her death, I did a memoriam for her with her daughter, who actually was in this kind of predicament as a young child with ulcerative colitis. And, was told that she needed to have her intestine removed, her large intestine removed. And ultimately with the diet, went on to normalize. I think she became a college professor, you know, very successful, high functioning adult. And oh, by the way, she was also diagnosed with something called infantile psychosis, of which there really is no such thing. Infantile psychosis, this woman, I think, is like, 50 years old or so. It probably was what is now being termed autism. So with that diet, she both healed her gastrointestinal problems and her behavioral brain problems.
Well, you know what's so interesting, and now we have to talk about it, because, a common diet prescribed for autism in the integrative community is gluten-free and dairy-free.
Yep, and SCD. A lot of the adherents of the SCD don't even have gastrointestinal conditions, like ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And it's being used by a lot of parents of autistic children on the autistic spectrum. So, let's give a nod to that fact.
Absolutely.
All right. This is a good point at which to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you. So please listen up. Here goes. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our questions with Layla. What's next?
Okay. Actually, we've got a question here from Steve. And actually, Dr. Hoffman, you've already responded to Steve, but I think this is very beneficial for the audience to hear. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I've recently started taking colostrum LD after listening to your program.
Mm-hmm.
I usually get an allergic reaction. The skin surrounding my cuticles break out to milk, eggs, cheese, etc. And colostrum LD gives me a slight allergic reaction too. Is there a form of colostrum that does not do this?
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Hoffman, if I may, I'll read your answer that you sent him.
Yeah.
You say the slight allergic reaction to colostrum is in all likelihood due to the milk proteins crossing a leaky or permeable gut lining into the bloodstream, where the immune system recognizes them as foreign material.
So, excuse me, the point I was trying to make is that the colostrum itself is not the culprit. It's actually a remedy for that problem of multiple allergies that we think that the basis for it's a gut barrier problem, and leaky gut permits many food antigens to cross into the systemic circulation and travel to remote parts of the body, to the skin, to the mucous membranes, to the brain, you know, when people experience brain allergies to foods.
And leaky brain.
Yeah.
Leaky brain.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, leaky gut, and then, you know, problems with the blood-brain barrier, and boom, you've got cerebral symptoms in relationship to food. So anyway, keep going.
The ideal solution, you say, would be to decrease the colostrum LD dose to, you know, about a half a teaspoon, mm-hmm. where the symptoms do not appear, or at least you're able to tolerate them.
Find the threshold. Find the threshold where the symptoms may or may not
right.
occur.
Yeah. With consistent colostrum LD use, as well as avoiding the things that perpetuate a leaky gut, and that's a long list of foods, Steve, the gut lining should heal within about a month. And when the gut is healed, the dose of the colostrum can then be increased. And then presumably, there will also be fewer or no symptoms when other dairy foods are consumed, because the proteins are not crossing the gut barrier anymore. Mm-hmm. This is such a wonderful, comprehensive answer, Dr. Hoffman.
Great. Yeah. So I think what he was saying is, well, is there like a dairy-free form of colostrum? And by definition, there's not really a dairy-free form of it.
Because colostrum is what it is. It's the first letdown of mother's milk.
However, it's purified and concentrated so that the dairy proteins are a smaller constituent of it than if you just, you know, drank milk.
Yeah.
And you're going to get very, like, minimal amounts of the colostrum beneficial constituents. And, of course, the pasteurization and processing of milk eliminates those beneficial compounds. So here in the colostrum, you're going to get the maximal amount of healing and repair compounds and the minimal amount of milk proteins. But you will get some. You know, admittedly, you will get some. So, I mean, I guess there are circumstances where if people have anaphylaxis to milk, you know, they just mm-hmm. like life-threatening reactions to dairy, you know, maybe this isn't for you. But what he's describing is like, he's got mild symptoms, you know, some mild skin symptoms. It's not like he's going to go into respiratory arrest if he takes the colostrum.
Precisely.
Right?
All right. Steve, we hope that helps you.
Yeah. And again, let's get some feedback from Steve. You know, if Steve's listening and Steve reintroduces the colostrum, and over time, I wonder if he's going to achieve some reduction in his allergic symptoms.
Yeah. Okay. We've got an email here from Judy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm wondering if you ever heard of the Stetsurizer meter and filters for dirty electricity elimination, and if you'd recommend it for your home.
Well,
Dr. Hoffman, didn't you do a podcast?
Yes, I've actually done a couple of podcasts with Dave Stetzer, who is, I mean, it sounds like kind of like a cuckamamie thing. It's like a device that cleans up the EMFs, the electromagnetic fields, in your home. And, you know, we're all surrounded by these things, and it's an invisible menace. And, you know, some people think it's just the most fringy figment of people's imagination that electromagnetic fields are having deleterious effects on them. But it totally makes sense. I mean, our brains are based on electrical impulses. Our heart rhythms, you know, we are electrical organisms to some extent.
We're electrical beings.
We're electrical beings. And to the extent that, I mean, what I marvel at, it's so scary and frightening sometimes, is that anywhere you are, you can turn on your phone and you can listen to TV, radio, you can download movies and pictures, and all of that, it's in the air. It's invisible, and it's in the air.
And it's on the subway, because the people standing over you and sitting next to you are now watching their favorite TV shows on the ride to work and back from work.
Well, it may be that that's stuff that they've already downloaded to their phones. I worry less about that. But you now have Wi-Fi in the subways, so that when you're in the tunnels, you can't get the Wi-Fi. But when you're in the stations, you pick up the Wi-Fi again. So sometimes if I leave early from a Yankee game or something, and, you know, the Yankees are trailing, you know, every time I pull into station, I get the signal again, and I go, did the Yankees manage to, you know, have a walk-off home run in the ninth inning to win the game?
Yeah.
You know, and disappointingly, usually not. So anyway, so the point being is that this device, and, you know, he's a credible individual. He's an electrical engineer. And what this device does is it actually detects the EMFs. And, you know, what I don't like is that sometimes people have these little amulets that they put around their neck, and they look sort of like something out of Star Trek, you know, like some, you know, something from the planet Zircon, you know, that they put around their neck, and it's supposed to ward off all these evil rays that surround us. I'm not sure that those things do anything, you know, but this guy is an electrical engineer, and it's a meter. It's simply a meter that detects these things. And then he has a way of, I don't know the physics of it, he's creating some, dampening, you know, I guess it's sort of like, those, sound dampening headphones that you have, you know, when you're in a plane or something, you don't hear
noise canceling.
Well, you can actually do some degree of, Wi-Fi cancellation, and you can create, sort of a Wi-Fi haven. Well, first of all, by eliminating devices, turning off devices. I mean, you certainly don't want to have a lot of live devices beaming at you while you sleep. I mean, at the very least, you know, you're not using your devices.
None of that should be in the bedroom. None of that, I tell everybody, none of that should be in the bedroom. Yeah. Or including your phone. It should not be on your nightstand. Yeah.
Or turn it off.
Dr. Hoffman, in looking at Mr. Setzer's website, I came across this symptoms list.
Yeah.
Of radio wave sickness, and this is from the U.S. Naval Medical Research Institute, 1972, declassified.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are some? Yeah, headaches, dizziness, nausea, memory loss, fatigue, tremors,
and probably some of that came out of the CIA and the, you know, the spy stuff, you know, where. The Russians actually beamed some of these things at embassy employees in an effort to mess them up. And, of course, we had this recent mysterious episode in Cuba where diplomats got sick. And, you know, again, this wasn't just from ordinary EMFs from, you know, your cell phone. This was like some sort of weaponized EMF that was designed to, I don't know, whether it was – intentional or inadvertent, but these high intensity beams had a deleterious effect on the balance and hearing of some of these individuals, gave them headaches, made them feel awful. And, you know, so there's something to this. There really is a science behind it. It's a very perplexing issue because, you know, of all the things that we worry about, you know, we worry about the stuff in our water, we worry about stuff we breathe, the things that they add to our foods. And then there's this whole realm that is virtually unresearched, unexplored, is what's going to be the effect. And then we're going to get to 5G. You know, this is a new thing, 5G.
Oh, yes.
And so we're going to be the first country in the world that's going to have 5G, and that'll mean faster streaming.
That means no way out, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a biophysicist. I don't know what the implications are that are for human health. But we're all embarking on a great experiment. And it's concerning, you know, and I'll be talking about it more. You know, maybe we'll invite Dave back to talk about the implications of this new technology on our health. Yeah.
Well, the other grand experiment has been genetically modified organisms. So,
We're increasingly in a very changed environment from what our genes evolved with. Which is, you know, the pre-industrial, you know, Paleolithic environment, different foods, different air, certainly no electronic interference with the magnitude that we're experiencing now. What's going to do to us, you know, it's hard to calculate.
Well, Judy, thank you for that question.
On that happy note, we'll have to conclude the program because I'm not feeling very well, actually. I think I'll lie down and turn off all my devices. And those of you who are listening, just once you're done, just turn off your device and put it away. And yeah. heretofore, listen to yet another. Don't listen ever again to
exactly.
to the Intelligent Medicine podcast, because it's probably doing you more harm than good via
Right. I try to make it a point every night to unplug, turn off all mm-hmm. the Wi-Fi in the apartment. Sometimes I forget, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever. But for the most part, that's what I do. And there's nothing in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Good for you.
So hopefully that helps.
Well, you really practice what you preach. I think you really
I try my best.
Given
I do.
That you're living in the real world and you have to, you know, work at a job and commute and live a life and, you know, you take a lot of measures, I think, that safeguard your health. So kudos to you.
Yeah.
You're walking the talk for sure.
Likewise, Dr. Hoffman.
I try my best.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for listening. And
thank you, everybody.
Remember, if you have questions, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Thanks, Layla, for joining us, and thanks, audience, for listening. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.